Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Fantasy Hockey X here on a Monday night previewing the Tuesday evening slate. I'm your host, Chris Wassel. All right, first and foremost, two games scheduled tonight. Basically, in so many words, best way to describe it, ouch. And furthermore, don't forget this one, kids, in the arsenal. Yep, it was a huge letdown, basically. Somebody forgot to tell Toronto the game started, and then when Toronto figured out the game started, they tried to do the old classic Team Finland trick where, hey, we try to shoot it through the side of the net and in, and we see if anybody knows. And it doesn't quite work that way. It might work for Finland. It doesn't work for Toronto. That's just not how this works. This is just not how any of this works. All right. Anyway, like we said, you know, big schedule tomorrow. Some very intriguing late hammer type stuff that could rival the imagination or completely utterly dud out. There's a lot of crazy. It's the old where do you begin? Let's put it this way. There is a ton of potential to go around on Tuesday night. You got some diabolically bad power penalty kills going up against some good power plays. You have some teams on back end of back to backs that probably shouldn't be. And you have one of the hotter teams in the league going up against a team that, look, gives up a ton of shots and can't do anything. There's all sorts of intrigue all over the place. There really is. Tomorrow is one of those 11-game slates where you do truly have the option to choose your own ending. That's where it makes it interesting. You go the entertainment road with Columbus. Columbus gives as good as it gets. The funny part with Columbus is Columbus cannot kill penalties right now. Yes, it's a small sample size, but wow, it's something else. Just how bizarrely bad Columbus has been defensively. Think about it. Columbus has allowed 38 goals in 10 games. They scored 36. Yes, I know Brandon Dubinsky's missed most of them, but come on. That's pretty rough. So the question becomes, as far as Detroit, what do you do? Do you even know what lines are going to be used by Detroit? It's a great question. That's the thing. That's one problem with tomorrow. Do you play some Detroit? Do you take a flyer on a couple Detroit players and hope for the best? By the way, Andreas Athanasiou is out. So that was one nice option that would have worked well that was cheap, but not going to happen tomorrow. So that is a problem. All joking aside, that is a huge, huge problem that you cannot trust Jeff Blashill to make a lineup for a team. And that's all I've heard from anybody so far. It's just how bad this looks. So the one good thing about 11-game slate is you have a lot of spread out pricing. The bad part is you have games like Columbus and Detroit that could either go off or be just a complete dud. There really is no in-between with Columbus, and that's the problem. Columbus can give up 8, but can only give up 1 or 2 in this game just as easily. Now, looking through, probably the best thing to do now, literally, if you're looking at Detroit, is go backdoor. Go backdoor on this. Mike Green's only 4,000. And this Cholowski is... It was that painful. Clearly. He's 5,400 on DraftKings, which just probably takes him out of any kind of play at this point. Sonic is an interesting value if you can figure out just what kind of deployment he's going to be given. He's actually been one of Detroit's better defensemen in limited time. But the problem is, Mike Green comes up, you know, he's healthy, they sign him. And it's a shame because he was actually doing really well for them. And can't use him because he got to sign back to the AHL. So you're stuck there. Columbus side. Hi, Boone Jenner. Boone Jenner's still reasonably priced, still around 5,000. The thing is, do you spend up for one of the top wingers? I mean, right now, Cam Atkinson is on fire. He's shooting the puck like he has in the past, and now he's getting rewarded for it just enough to make it worthwhile. Now, look, to be fair, it can be a risk with Atkinson at times. The St. Louis game is a great example. Columbus wins 7-4, and he was completely invisible in that game. Completely. Okay. The game against Chicago about a little over a week ago. Again, active early, disappeared late. Just brutal. So choose carefully. It's the best way to describe what you may see there on Tuesday night. Look at the stacks. Checked lines. It's likely to change, but I do like the general line, and I do like Columbus. I oddly enough, as crazy as this sounds, I kind of like Columbus's power play. I do like part of Detroit's as a backdoor contrarian play. If you're going to go that far down the rabbit hole on Tuesday night, goaltending, nah, I can't freaking touch it. It's just not happening. Speaking of another game that I just can't trust the goaltending, even though it could be there, Boston and Carolina. Carolina has a colossally bad special teams percentage. When your special teams percentage is under 80 combined, that's hideous. That is hideous. I mean, it's just rough. Carolina's killed about 2 out of every 3 penalties this year, which means they basically give up what feels like a power play goal game. It's not like the old days where Carolina was pretty disciplined. They are not anymore. And teams are taking advantage of it. Boston tends to play Carolina better on the road than they do at home. The numbers this year, look, a lot of numbers are small sample sizes, so you do have to take some of them with a grain of salt. But over the last 5 games, ironically, both teams have struggled to score. Both have only scored 10 goals. Does that mean a breakout is coming? It's a good question, because remember, Carolina almost came back, didn't quite do it against San Jose. Same type of pace game against Boston. Boston loves to dominate possession, especially with the first line, who's been good at times this year, but it also has had some vulnerable moments. It might be time to take a look at something like Carolina line 2 again. They seem to not ever let a team down when they need it. And there's, again, like we said, there is just a lot of freaking crazy numbers all over the place. And we haven't even gotten to some of the best games yet. That's downright frightening. Now, again, like we said, I almost would poach and go Boston's stack something from Boston's power play or play at least somebody prominent from that first unit power play. Because Carolina's penalty kill just gives up too many god darn chances just to not try it at least. Yeah, Boston's had trouble scoring on the road. I get that, but sometimes you can't go by that completely. You never know. You really don't. Speaking of you never really know, but oh god, it just invites people to play the ever living loving daylights out of this. The Islanders travel to Pittsburgh. Look, you want a game, mini game stack this thing? Go ahead. You want to take that kind of risk on at least one lineup out of, say, 15 or 20? Just freaking do it. You may get rewarded handsomely in this type of game. It really can't hurt. So, again, see what the heck happens and go from there. Funny thing is, Pittsburgh, despite like some really uneven performances, is 6-1-1 on the season. They're 4-0, here's the hilarious part. They're 4-0-1 at home, though, and they've been just outright dominant in the last five games. I'm sorry, they're 4-0-1 the last five. They've scored 25 goals. The Islanders are no slouches either, and they've scored 18. Both teams have been stingy, around two goals a game in their last five, which just seems weird coming from the Islanders. But yet, here we are. Something is going to give in violently in this game, considering that both power plays are lethal. Pittsburgh's is hitting at nearly 30% now. And I do think the Islanders' penalty kill, even at 80%, is rather vulnerable, to say the least. Goaltending has kind of bailed that number out, at least a little bit, out on Strong Island, as it's called. If you want to go with part of the Malkin line to get exposure to the power play, yeah, you could go do that. If you're on the Islander side and you're not playing Ryan Pulock, Pulock has been extremely snake bitten. Did score his first goal almost, you know, and then did. His expected goals for he basically should have about three, maybe even four goals right now. You know, it's that kind of performance. You go, okay. Seems a little bit interesting. The Islanders haven't been on the road. They just hammered Philly on Saturday. I mean, they hammered them. There's no other way to put it. It's a question of, does this turn into the typical Islanders Penguins game where there's a lot of scoring? I'd love to see the over under pop up to 7 in this game. I'll bet the at that point I might be tempted to bet the under even, because if you expect a one-sided affair one way or the other, it could work out. Now, right now, as of this moment, it is a 6.5/15. I'm not surprised. Let that at least settle in a little. Like I said, right now that game's teetering between a 6.5 under and a 6.5 over. That tells me people aren't quite so sure that tilting to 7 as they might have been when the line first came out. We'll see how it goes there. All right, like I said, you want a game stack, mini game stack, that one, you can do that one too. There's a lot of choices. I do like the top line, and I am willing to ride Brock Nelson a little bit longer. It is unfortunate that his price is coming up everywhere. Again, it was bound to happen at some point. It really was. Even then, it's still only 4,700. The hilarious part is Matthew Barzell's value has dipped so much it's down to 5,000 on DraftKings. At some point, Barzell's going to get it going. Team like Pittsburgh that gives up a lot of speed laterally might be that team. Might. Could be worth a shot, especially in DraftKings for that price. That's low for him. I know he's not off to the greatest starts, but come on. Just yikes. Okay, moving on down because, well, we gotta get this going and we gotta get this down. All right. Calgary and Buffalo. Calgary is one of the weirder teams you'll ever see. Better on the road, typically, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not so good at home. On the back end of a back-to-back. Beat Toronto tonight. Solid performance by Mike Smith. Rare thing said of the season. David Rittich probably gets a start tomorrow. Buffalo is not a bad team. Like people said, you know, hey, Buffalo is 2 games over .500 for the first time in what feels like forever. And they did lose the other night. I understand that. But one thing with Buffalo games lately, the over is hitting 5 straight. It's part of the reason why the over-under is pushed up to where it has right now. It's at 6. It probably stays just barely at 6. It's mostly at 6 because Buffalo's implied goal total is around 3.5. That's been teetering. That may try to push it back to 5.5. Either way, it could be a lot of interest here. Jason Bonneville has 8 points in his last 4 games. He has meshed really well with Jack Eichel. Could be a play. Like I said, you don't want to go all the way down and in and around. For what it's worth, you know, you look at like. I'm not surprised by this. Jack Eichel's price went up a good bit. It's shot back up to 7,100. I guess the other night when I kept telling people to play him, DraftKings got the message and said, maybe we should up the value on this guy finally. Again. Either way, I like Buffalo's power play. Calgary lives dangerously with their penalty kill. They're very aggressive and can be easily beaten. The problem is this. Buffalo's power play is also just as bad, which puts Calgary's first power play unit in play, i.e. Monahan and freaking Gaudreau again, who struck for 2 goals, and also Elias Lindholm. Now, Lindholm, goal and assist tonight. Very good doing it. Has handled the increased role very well. I mean, this is a guy that barely was playing 15 minutes a night last year. 15 minutes a night. And now, with Bill Peters, mind you, moving the Cal. I mean, it's just weird because Bill Peters was the coach last year, and I don't know what happened, and who knows. But either way, Lindholm was playing just about 20 minutes a game this season, with top line role, top power play minutes. And it's working for him. I mean, yes, I know his shooting percentage is way off the charts. But, hey, you sometimes just have to ride the wave as long as you can. All right. Like I said, special teams kind of night. makes it easier when you're going to stack. All good. All right, let's get this going a little bit more. Dallas goes to Montreal. We'll do this real fast. Dallas is on a streak in the wrong way. They've lost 3 of their last 5 and 4 of their last 6. What's weird with Dallas is Dallas has excellent peripheral numbers as far as special teams and such. But the problem is, on the road, they're just a nightmare. They're 0-3. They've been outscored 11-3 on the road. And yes, it's Montreal, and Montreal's 6-2-2, and they're a feel-good story. And they play well at home. They score just enough. You know, they score about 3 goals a game. I mean, Montreal's that type of team, speedy team. Gets a lot of shots. If they score 3 goals, they're going to win most nights. Or at least they should. It makes for quite a fun game. At what point is Dallas going to show up on the road? And I don't know. I don't know if that's tomorrow night. That's a real concern. Do I consider Sagan? I don't know if I can do it. I'll consider the Deneaux of the world, the Byrons of the world, perhaps. Max Domi is a, you gotta at least have him in there. I do like Montreal. I wish Montreal had a little bit better of a power play. I really do. Make this game very interesting. Because I do think Dallas's power play can strike once, but is it enough to play them? Remember, the reality is, if you're going to try and play Dallas in a GPP, you need at least 2 goals, if not 3. And I don't know if they can get there, or at least enough exposure to their top line, room, top power play, to get that total. That's not an easy total to try and get. So, what do you do? That's a good question. The answer is simple. You can try to fade that game sideways and hope for the best, because there's so many other options that you can try on Tuesday night that make it worthwhile. Speaking of, there's New Jersey and Tampa Bay. The expectation in this game is that you're going to see a high amount of shots. Tampa has played a lot of games, 1.4 games in 6 nights. So this, I think, is 5-8 now or something like that. It's a high number. Tampa's been great at home. New Jersey doesn't have much of a sample size because they only truly played 1 game away from home, although they played overseas against Edmonton, but that counted as a home game. New Jersey can score, but they also, the one concern, I don't know if it will play out in this game, they suppress a lot of high danger scoring chances. They're among the best in the league out of all their scoring chances. Only about 25% of them end up as high danger chances. That's the best in the league out of anybody. I don't think anybody is under 30 even. That's an impressive number, considering that New Jersey just give up their fair share of scoring chances. They just don't give up the point blank ones that you would expect. As a matter of fact, two of the goals that Keith Kincaid allowed the other night against Nashville last week were medium danger shots. They weren't even high danger. Yes, they were down the middle, but they were at a distance enough where he should have been able to stop them. By the way, now, don't quote us on this because we get in trouble if we're wrong. Looks like the Stamkos, Kucherov, Miller line has been reunited, which gave the Devils fits last year when they played each other. Ironically, though, Andres Palat, who equally gave the Devils a hard time in the playoffs, is out. He's out with an injury at least for two games. Hemond is out for at least probably three. He's out at least a week. Nobody seems to know what the injury is. It's just that he is week to week. So that is going to hurt Tampa at least a little bit. It helps Mikhail Sergachev's value. He's cheap and reasonable and probably is going to be played and owned in a lot of places. It's tough because you look at, say, Tampa, who can go Golden Home. It hasn't played quite that way out this year. They've only got 10 goals in 5 games, but any team could pop a 4 or 5 spot in Tampa Bay. It really can happen. So anything is possible. I do like Tampa's second power play unit almost as much as its first. If you're thinking of going that way, it's, you know, well, what the heck's worst that could happen? There you go. All right. One of the games of the night, start getting into the part of the schedule that you just go, holy crap, where do you begin? Vegas travels to Nashville. Look, Philip Forsberg is on a bender and a half. Here's the fun part in all of this. Forsberg is just over 7,000. Kyle Palmieri is actually priced higher than him, even though Forsberg has 10 goals in 11 games on 40 shots. What may be scary is just the simple fact that Forsberg is at least in the early going, is finally getting the ice time and not being tinkered around with by Peter Laviolette. He's averaging just a little bit over 19 minutes a night, which is about what he needs to play anyway. And you hope as a fantasy hockey fan, first and foremost, that that keeps happening. His numbers are through the roof. His shot, look, the guy has a repertoire of shots, which is scary. He has 3 shots that are above average. Wrist shot, snap shot, slap shot. The slap shot he rarely uses. The wrister is one of the best in the league, and his snap shot is downright deceptive as far as hand-eye coordination and release. That release is what makes it special. Any snapshot, regardless of what you see, has to have a great release for it to be great. It's cut and dry. Now, Nashville Line 1 has been very hot lately. It is not going to be easy for Vegas to contain this line, obviously because of matchup. Nashville is going to try and get the matchup it wants. Vegas has not been very good on the road this year. Okay. They've been stingy, but they've also only scored 8 goals in 5 games. They've been better of late overall, though. And that's why this matchup has a little bit more oomph to it. Because, well, look, Nashville can score at nearly 4 goals a game when they want to. And now Vegas is starting to score as well. They have 15 goals in the last 5 games. Alex Tuch is a solid play. You have to look at guys that are reasonably not going to make it into the lineup. Tuch has come up in value is the only concern I have with him. It did not take long. All right, let's put it away. Tuch came in around mid-4s, and now is up to 5,400. You know, 2-goal shot performance tends to do that. The biggest thing with Tuch is basically playing top 6 to almost top line time right now. He played 19 and a half minutes last time out. Max Pacioretty's day-to-day. Don't expect him back for tomorrow. Don't expect. And besides, Pacioretty has struggled mightily this year again. And again, and again, and again. You get the idea. you know, you basically have a two-pronged attack for Vegas, Marchessault or Tuck. Tuck is the cheaper one. He's kind of the one you go with. Center-wise, it's kind of rough. I mean, William Karlsson's been decent enough. He has 9 points in 10 games, but his shot volume is... which he hasn't scored 10 goals yet. He only has three. Last, that's just how it is. So, it's going to be a lot of fun that in that sense. I like ways of trying to get Nashville 2 involved. If I can't get Nashville 1 because of price point, I'm trying to get Nashville 2 in somehow just to try and capitalize on value. See who is on the wings for Nashville 2 as well, just to see what you can save. It's like kind of like a Columbus. You want to see if you can save money with Declare in places. You want to pick your spots. Goaltending-wise, maybe Rene. See if Rene's going to actually play first. Do check. If it's Saros, that makes a little bit of a difference. But it is something that at least I... By the way, both power plays are awful. Both penalty kills are eh. So whoever probably scores power play goal probably wins the game. It has that kind of look and feel to it. All right. Let's get this going. Minnesota and Edmonton. Woof. Woof, woof, and woof. Okay. Connor McDavid all day and Connor McDavid all night. Maybe you consider Cam Talbot just because he's been playing a little bit better of late. My only concern is they're still giving up about 3 goals a game. But they face a Minnesota team on the rest, which has been more of a mixed bag this year than usual, but most cases, by law of averages, it should even out eventually, or actually by evening out, should tilt towards the home team or the team that is rested. We'll see. But Edmonton's first unit power play has buoyed this rise in their numbers, which means, of course, I'll pull my pants up or something, or some other thing where they'll say I'm fat and whatever. Aside, all joking aside, Cam Talbot versus Alex Stalock tomorrow seems to be likely advantage. You think Talbot? Minnesota's penalty kill isn't quite as good on the road as it is at home. Oh boy. We'll see. It should be a lot of fun. That's going to be one that... Wait to see what morning lines look like before you go stacking away. All right. Speaking of seeing before... burn before reading. Philly travels to Anaheim. Remember I said literally there was one team that was probably worse on the penalty kill lately than Carolina? It's Philadelphia. There's three teams on the slate to have a sub 70% penalty kill, and at least two of them have just been so hard that it should be lower. Philadelphia is one of them. This is a huge West Coast trip for them in many ways. They've fallen to 4-7. They're giving up 4+ goals a game. 4+. They cannot get goaltending. They've given up 21 goals in the last 5 games. They've gone 1-4 in that span. They were 500 at one point. And they can't score. Now, here's the interesting part. Anaheim is in the same position. They've lost 5 straight. They're just as bad. Okay. Anaheim has given up 19 goals in the span. Only scored 9. Have given up 42 shots a game in the last 5. 39.3 overall. Their penalty kill is 80% literally because of John Gibson and goaltending. It would probably be around 50 or 55% if it wasn't for him. It really would be something of an absolute albatross. They give up more chances than anybody, high danger, et cetera. If this isn't a get well game for Philly's offense, I don't know what is. The one thing that Philly can do on the road usually is score goals. They just can't stop them. And that's where you have to look at what Anaheim has left as far as healthy bodies. And if Silverberg can go, you almost have to put him in. That's how bad this is. That is seriously how bad this is. It's rough. I mean, look, Ryan Getzlaff is only 6,000 on the slate. 6,000. That's it. He's 6,000. Okay. Ryan Kessler's fallen off the table. Sean Couturier has been awful all year. Couturier has 3 goals in 10 games. Literally has done nothing else. That's a problem. Even Ryan Getzlaff has shot 2.5 shots a game. Just saying something. Obviously, the depressed values in this game make it interesting. Giroux is 5,900. I can't remember the last time I've seen Claude Giroux under 6,000. He's 5,900. Simmons is 5,000. Silverberg is 5,400. Raquel is 5,500. If you think that this is going to turn into just a balls out crazy knock 'em drag out freaking score fest, you attack this game. Late slate is probably the game to attack other than Arizona, Ottawa. Arizona, Ottawa, and Philly, Anaheim are the 2 games to attack amongst the late 3 games. Rangers, San Jose, I mean, you can play San Jose. I don't know what you expect from the Rangers. I don't think anybody knows what to exactly expect from that. That's where it makes it tough. Again, this is a game that could reinvigorate Anaheim's power play a little bit just because Philly's penalty kill is so bad. But this is also a game that carries risk because literally both teams could flat out flop offensively. So it has one of 2 ways it can go. And it's just what happens. All right. All right. Hard is to believe there's a couple more games to go. Ottawa plays Arizona. Ottawa, no Brady Tkachuk. They just faced 50-something shots against Vegas and lost in overtime on a penalty shot. And they give up 4.75 goals a game on the road. Here's something funny, though, in this game. Arizona is one of the most stingy teams in the league at home in particular this year, and one of the more stingier teams overall in the NHL. They only given up 2 goals a game all year. So they've given up 20 goals in 10 games. They're 5-5, which for them is like being 5/500. Yes, we really did say that. Okay. What do you do with Arizona? Knowing that you have a team like Ottawa that gives up a lot of goals, and you have a team like Arizona that suddenly, after not being able to score at all their first 5 games, it's funny. Arizona was 1-4 in their first 5 games, generating a ton of shots. they've done basically the same in the last five games, and they scored 22 goals. So this is. And by the way, Arizona actually delivered in the last game. Everybody thought, oh God, they're this huge, humongous favorite. They're gonna flop. Oh no, they actually did not. And they will be huge favorites again. I mean, look, the line doesn't lie. The line is teetering towards minus 200 on some boards. Pittsburgh and Columbus are the only other two. Well, now San Jose keeps teetering up to 260, 270, so they're the highest. But still, it's the idea. This could have high potential. And it's funny because Ottawa, Arizona is 5.5, probably because of Arizona. So Arizona's implied goal total is right around 3.5. Ottawa's is a little less than 2. Now, that's where you get it from. There you add two numbers and bingo, bango, dunno. I'm looking at Arizona's power play and going, I know it's bad. But at least if I stack the parts of the power play, I can get exposure to the even strength lines that have been really good. And that's the way I kind of approach it. Well, it's the old let's see what happens. And somewhere I throw in Alex Goligoski because like a cockroach, the guy finds a way to get 35 points a season. He's done it for the last five. You have to be kind of impressed by that. You find a way to – you get Antti Raanta in, especially in cash games. You're not sure what kind of shot output you're going to see from Ottawa, but that it's not going to be high, and that's the problem. I need high output if I want to play GPP, and I'm not going to get that here. So unless Raanta gets a shutout, which by all rights he should have the other night when the goal that never should have counted did, but again, that's a risk you play when you have a guy in net that's only going to see 23, 24 shots in a game. You have to almost get a shutout to make it work. Because basically you get, say, the 25 save shutout, that's 10 points on DraftKings. So you need a shutout because literally if he doesn't get the shutout, that's a big difference. That's 7 points right there. That's significant. If I'm stacking anything from Ottawa, it's not much. It would be kind of amusing and fun just to see what might happen. But again, there's a lot of depressed prices with Ottawa. And it makes a sort of confirm play for Ottawa a little bit. But there's a lot of value because of it. Kristen Fisher has come up a good bit just because of the last game's performance. Interestingly enough, Richard Panik has been playing on the first line at times for Arizona's just 3,400. There's a lot of speed options in this game. It makes it interesting. Brad Richardson's another one. Duchesne is something you consider, but has risk. Tierney's kind of the same. Again, look, it's not an easy matchup for the centers of Ottawa. Thomas Chabot really is like a sort of Erik Karlsson at this point. LeJoie is kind of the same thing. He's only 4,900. That's almost about the same floor, too. Cody Ceci has an excellent floor only because he keeps blocking shots because he's bad defensively. Jordan Esterly has found the back of the net a couple times of late, and that makes him a value play at 3,600. So it's the type of things that you want to look at least.
you know, the Henestroses and Fishers of the world are in the low fours. That makes for something of a play. And then after that, you're kind of like just playing around and searching and looking and fishing, because there's not that much. Now tomorrow night, you're not going to get Antti Raanta for 7,400 on DraftKings. It's not going to happen. Craig Anderson, 7,400, makes him a little bit interesting. But again, do I want to push that tomorrow when there's other options? It could work, but it just doesn't have a high probability. And again, there's a lot of low price players on both teams because Arizona slumped for so long. And that's where you see and you look at, well, what can happen here? Now, I'm tilting at least towards Arizona. And again, trying to use parts of the top unit power play to get exposure to at least both top six lines and do it that way. It's just kind of stringing things along to try and get it to work. It could, it might not. Who knows? We'll see. All right. Final game of the night, Rangers travel to San Jose. Not surprisingly enough, the Rangers are the biggest underdogs, and already people are calling for David Quinn's head in New York. Again, it's not all his fault. The team in front of him is pretty bad, and they give up a ton of chances. And again, it's another team that just cannot kill penalties to save their lives. They're awful on their road. They've given up 23 goals on the road. 23. They've given up 18 in the last five. But they can score a few, and that's the thing. This is something that we said with the Rangers. Their top six is not all bad. And they can do some things. They just get gouged a lot. And often in bunches. That's definitely something that, you know, you have to be a little bit unsure. Look, San Jose, not for nothing, scored 11 goals in 3 home games. Overall, they've scored almost 3.5 contest, and they scored 21 in their last 5, and they've won 4 of their last 5 as well. The only loss coming in a shootout. The interesting thing with San Jose is the over is hit in the last 3 games too, which kind of leads you to believe that the over might come close here again. The one wrinkle in this is Vegas has kind of gotten wise to this, and the thought process was they might go 5.5 here, but so far it's holding on at 6 by a slim margin. Look, I'm looking at San Jose power play 1 and just going with it. Just so I could slide the exposure around a little bit. It's a common technique to use, especially in bigger slates where maybe you do want to go 4 mini stacks and one extra. Yep. Okay. It should be lots of fun. All right. If I'm playing Ranger players at all, I'm stringing one off, and I'm looking at Mika Zibanejad, and I'm looking at him heavily. He's one of the better players in the league that usually gets overlooked. Timo Meier has actually priced himself out, though he's been so hot lately that it's almost tough to not play a lot of these guys. Like, Meier has 8 goals in 10 games. He's shooting the lights out. He's getting great shot volume. And he's playing 16 minutes a night. How long can it continue? I think that's kind of the thing here. Now, what's funny is because of his breakout potential, To be fair, Meyer was always priced pretty high from the start of the season, at least on DraftKings. So, yeah, it's at least something to look at. But, I mean, look, Hurdle's up now. Kane is up. And they're all price appropriate pretty much because, I mean, if you look at the $1,500 per point rule, Meyer's right there just about. Meyer would be 7,000. That's not terrible. Kane would be right about 6,500. Hurdle again, 6,600. A little bit low priced. He's a little bit depressed price wise. Matt Zuccarello is heated up, which would put him in a good position. Zibanejad is 6,600, which is a risk. But his points have been great. Now, the question is, do you go Couture and get the exposure on the power play? Or do you try and slide back and go Pavelski and hope for the best at 55? You could save a little bit of money here. Pavelski's looked better of late. He's at least getting 3 shots a game pretty consistently. It makes it tough because he just isn't scoring a lot of points. He has one point in his last 5. Okay. So that's usually where we're at here. Now, like I said, should be a lot of fun. As always, like I said, this is just an early look at things. Martin Jones I wouldn't touch. I wouldn't touch either goal in these games because there's just too many other plays to touch. Wait till confirmation, typically around morning skate time, around lunch, around noon Eastern. Typically, you start getting some of your confirmations, and then by 2, 3 o'clock, you see more and more. And then hopefully leading up to 7 o'clock when the slate starts. Best thing to do, again, is check for line shifts and injuries. There's been a lot of them this year. It's over 100 injuries currently in the league. That should offer some humbling perspective. As always, you can download the show on iTunes, and it'll probably be linked somewhere throughout the Twitterverse and social media, as it always is. Again, I want to thank everybody for the support, as always. And basically, in the sense of senses, best of luck on Thursday night. May you dominate your slate. Aloha. This is the archive. We're saying goodbye in the only way we can. Peace out. See you later in the week. Thank you for listening to Fantasy Hockey X.